adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario.
Welcome to Rated This Way special post-game podcast. I'm your host, Michael D'Angelo. Of course, as with me, as always, we have Paolo Nobiloni Mangoni.
Good day, everyone.
We have Mr. Chris Pacelli.
Hello, everybody.
And of course, we have Julian Padu D'Angelo.
How's everybody doing today?
Julian de Guzman D'Angelo.
Oh, Julian de Guzman. Is that you on TSN, Julian?
I mean, I'd probably do a better job, I think.
Poor guy, though. No, poor guy.
Pobre de Guzman. Oh, jeez. TSN, their streaming has been... Yeah, it's been...
Their cable has been good.
Et cetera. Yeah.
The cable has been good. I'm not faulting the cable, but man, TSN Direct has been absolute ass.
Maybe that's just TSN Direct in general. Maybe it's always ass.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah. I blame COVID.
Why, Michael?
I don't know. Let's move on. So we have a really great for everybody here quickly to sum up what happened in the Italia game. And again, just to say outright what happened here, of course, we're posting this after an Italian win again, another 3-0 victory for the Italians. So Forza.
This is the second ever 3-0 win in European championship history
for
Italy. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, after their opening game, 3-0 win over Turkey, of course, last game. This is their second, and their second in a row, clearly. So great stat there, Paolo. I'm sure you'll pull out just fantastic gems like that again for the rest of the show. but let's get into it here quickly. Where should we start, guys? I guess from...
Well,
the whistle. Any surprises first? Any surprises on the starters?
Well, I personally thought like the latest reports were saying Toloi was going to start at right back, but it seems that Chris was right in predicting that Di Lorenzo would get the start. Right, Chris?
Yeah, I would have been surprised if Toloi started. I didn't think this was a game where Italy would have expected to defend more than attack. So, I'm happy Di Lorenzo started.
And, you know, I thought Berardi, we mentioned last week that, you know, Berardi was in form. It was only right that Berardi would get the second straight start. And I think he deserved it the way he played.
Yeah, the first 5 to 10 minutes was a little shaky with him. I found just his decision making. He was trying to dribble a bit too much in the wrong areas. But yeah, I thought as the game went on, he kind of grew into it. And yeah, I think he merited the start. Again, I'm not Immobile's biggest fan. I'll probably keep saying that even if Italy somehow win this tournament. I probably sound like an idiot because he scored 2 games in a row now. Mm-hmm. I just find he needs too many chances to score. And like I think I said this last week, is as Italy goes further in the tournament, they are going to get less and less chances. This game alone, I mean, 13 shots, only 3 were on target. I know some were very close, but we're not going to get this many shots. We're not going to get this many chances. And I'm just not confident enough in Immobile to finish the one good chance he has a game. Now, that being said, I recognize that Belotti would be his ideal replacement. I'm not saying Belotti is world-class and is automatically better than Immobile. I just kind of have more confidence in Belotti to finish that one chance over Immobile.
Yeah, because he had about 2 or 3 chances before he scored his goal from outside the box, and it wasn't even a header. It was the third goal was from 25 yards out.
Give or take. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I definitely agree with Chris. He was wasteful until he scored his goal. But again, the game was kind of already concluded at that point. So I do agree with Chris.
Yeah, Julian, did you want to say something quickly?
No, just, I mean, I still think he's the guy. I think he will be the starter moving forward still. But yeah, he does need to be better. I think he had a solid, like, three good chances before converting his fourth, which was also the most difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was just a little bit weird, but he missed three very good chances prior to that, which if we're going to come up against a big team, he's going to need to score those.
Yeah, like Chris said too, again, you're not going to get that many.
Yeah.
Okay, well, just let's go through the game then here quickly. Now we've kind of touched on some talking points that we'll probably talk a little bit more on later on too. But so it starts off, relatively well. Their pace is strong. They actually end up scoring in the 18th minute. Giorgio Chiellini, off of a corner kick, is the man in the air, falls to him, and he ends up kicking it in the net, only for VAR to call it back because of a handball. Now, gentlemen, what do we think? Let's start with Chris.
Live time, I thought it was a good goal. I want to say it was the right call, it's harsh, and that's probably the best way for me to summarize it. It hurts me to say that because I really wanted for that to be at least first goal and get off to a good start like that, but I think it was the right call, and like I said, just harsh.
So I was watching the game in Italian because, again, TSN Direct crapped out, as per usual. And the Italian commentators were saying that it was the right call because the handball came from the player who finished the goal. So they were saying that if the handball came from the player who assisted it, then
it'd be fine.
It would be fine. But because it was from the same player who finished the goal, it was called back. So again, because that's the rule, I don't have any arguments against it. But that being said, it wasn't like Chiellini's arm was extended or, you know, like made his body bigger so he can get an advantage. I didn't see any advantage. I saw someone who just jumped and challenged the defender for the ball, and it happened to hit his hand.
Yeah, and just quickly, I think that there's no, like, you know, the first game there was, in my opinion, a more intentional handball than that was. And I mean, it wasn't, I'm talking about the Turkey game where it hit his arm as it was being crossed. And that wasn't a handball either. Or that wasn't a handball, rather. And then this is less of an infraction for me, but it is a handball. And I understand because it results in a goal that it's a little bit more, it's a different case. And I mean, it's in front of net, et cetera. But I just think it is harsh. Like Chris said, it's harsh for sure for me. Julian.
Yeah, as much as, I mean, we wanted the goal to stand. I wanted the goal to stand. I thought it was a very typical Chiellini goal. I do ultimately think it was the right call. Yeah, I mean, of course, I don't think any handballs are really intentional anymore, but it's just his arm was extended slightly, albeit he was pushed, but the ball hit his hand directly off the corner. So I think ultimately it was the right call.
Right.
And it's unfortunate because Michael, he went off injured, what, minutes later?
Well, and that's it. He was just so upset that he refused to play the rest of the game and came off. Not too long. So that was in the 18th. Obviously, they checked for VAR, et cetera. And there's only a little bit of play left after that before he ends up coming off around the 24th minute.
And Michael, what did I say for the past 2 weeks that he
would play the whole tournament?
He said that Chiellini will be able to play the entire tournament and will be the most important player on the pitch.
Yeah. False. I said that he only has one good game because they're playing these games 4 days in between. So every four days, they're playing games actually, every 4 days.
I think now that you said false, I think you actually said he was going to be the new false nine. it's confusing, but that's what you said.
Listen, don't spread fake news to our listeners, all right?
I'll do what I want when I want, however I want. So in the 24th minute, he comes off the field injured. Looks like a calf or a hamstring, possibly. which, you know, on this podcast, we've talked about perhaps Chiellini maybe couldn't even play the entire tournament. Sure, who said that? I definitely wouldn't have said it, but in any case, he comes off, Acerbi comes on, and about 2 minutes after that, Italy get their breakthrough where you know, they thought they had it before, and they end up getting it through Manuel Locatelli, who makes his own breaks in this game, my friend. He takes the ball, takes a pass, maybe a pass from Bonucci, I can't remember, but in any case, about midway through the field, he passes it over to, it was Berardi, I think, on the
spread there, that right? ball to Berardi?
It was Locatelli.
Locatelli himself.
And it was a one-touch pass, too. That was exactly. Amazing to watch.
Yeah.
So passes over to Berardi. Berardi, of course, comes in and cuts in and eventually finds Locatelli, who has made the sprint from the center field all the way to 5 yards from the goal, and he's there to finish off for a beautiful, beautiful running play, beautiful assist from Berardi, but fantastic goal. What do we think of that?
I mean, the pass to Berardi for me was the highlight of that goal. I mean, I just watching that live, you couldn't kind of feel just from that pass that something big was going to happen.
Yeah, like I said, the pass for me was incredible, and like Paulo said, you kind of hope something comes from a play like that when it starts with such a world class pass. You know, it took great vision, and the technical ability to hit that first time is incredible. So, yeah, good goal, and I think it was how much longer? Sorry, after the
it was minutes. It was 2 minutes. So he came off in the 24th, and in the 26th, they score their first goal.
Yeah.
So I thought the timing was good too. It's more so for Acerbi to kind of settle in, because I'm sure he's nervous as hell coming in midway through the game. I think he has less than 20 caps for Italy. So good for obviously the whole squad, but especially good for him to come in now and he has a lead and he can kind of settle in a bit more.
Right.
Yeah. And I just want to point out, it was the Sassuolo connection.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys have played with each other for what, 2-3 years now? So literally Locatelli out wide to Berardi back to Locatelli.
That's right. So ever since he came from where, Milan for $15 million?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And now he's
a steal.
And surely he will
at
be
the
sold
time it was not a steal.
Come on. Okay.
Paulo, he was barely playing. It was a good transfer fee at the time. Anyways,
was barely playing for a Milan team who
That was shit.
Exactly. So how is $15 million a steal?
Listen, I think he could have started for that Milan team. But anyway, we're getting off topic.
That's more an indictment on the state of Milan being shite.
Shut up.
Anyways.
But anyway, his transfer fee to Juventus will go up to $60 million now.
I don't think so. I think they'll still manage to get him for 40. That's just my conjecture, of course.
Yeah, because you'll be able to throw in some useless plug for €15 million.
Yeah. Yes. Fagioli for €15 million.
And it won't even be Fagioli. It'll just be a bunch of beans in a. Yeah. Okay. And the rest of the half, I mean, Italy just kind of dominates after that. Continues to at least, and they don't make it 1-0, and you think, you know, maybe this is kind of a trap for them, because they definitely had some opportunities to get the second goal, and it doesn't come. So again, you're going into the second half maybe a little nervous than you should be. What do we think on that first half then, again ending 1-0? Is that was that a good balance of play? Could it have been different?
Listen, I thought it was a deserved result for Italy in the first half. Definitely showed more confidence than the start of the Turkey game. I thought I definitely thought they were more more relaxed when they started this game compared to the 10 minutes for the first 20 minutes against Turkey. And they definitely created more opportunities and actually closed down Switzerland better than they did against Turkey.
Yeah, I'll that is, I mean, we know Shaqiri's kind of the high profile guy on Switzerland, and I didn't really notice him in the first half. And I know I'm pretty sure he came off and they said it was with an injury. So who knows when that really came on, but for Italy to neutralize, you know, a high profile player who can, you know, make something happen from nothing speaks to how well they defended as well.
Yeah. And he looked frustrated in the end of the first half for sure. And a little bit in the second half, but let's get into that. So the second half kicks off. It looks like Italy might be ruining their poor fortune from the first half where they didn't score a second goal because Switzerland actually come off pretty strong. They get a couple chances. And then eventually after about less than 10 minutes of play in the 52nd minute, Locatelli with another beautiful goal, fantastic strike from the top of the box. He gets the pass and he's just in position to just smack it with, I think his right, maybe his left. In any case, he puts it between two defenders and it goes into the bottom right corner of the goal.
Yeah, he initially had it on his right and then one defender comes sliding across. He pushes it to his left and then hits it across his body. Got a great finish as well.
Yeah, perfect.
Nice little Barella assist on that. I'm going to throw that one out there.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, Julian, yeah, do you have anything to add on it?
I mean, it was a fantastic shot right between the two defenders into the opposite corner. Keeper had no chance whatsoever.
Didn't.
That's really about it. Barella assisted, but again, he made the early run and it didn't work, and then he kind of snuck back into the play, got the ball, laid it off for Locatelli, who finished it.
I don't know. I was about to say he definitely deserved the man of the match or the so-called star of the match. Heineken star of the match. Exactly. For this game with that second goal as well. I thought that was the best of his both goals.
I mean, was it though? Like the first goal was, I mean, the take of, I guess just the power of the shot, everything. Yeah. I mean,
the the first goal was the highlight. The shot itself on the second, the goal itself was the highlight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean if you're not a fan of the build-up, I could see what you mean. But yeah. You know, there's more to it than just finishing the job. You know, Paulo. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean,
we're talking about foreplay here.
I mean, if you don't finish, you don't get the goal. You know what I mean? You don't score.
No. I mean, if you don't finish, you don't have illegitimate children. But that's.
Hey, which podcast am I on?
You're on the Sex Positive Rent It This Way podcast. Yeah. So again, 2-0 Italy. They get their break, and they're looking like, you know, this is probably going to be a positive result again. You know, after having, again, maybe perhaps a little bit of nerves to start the second, they see it through and have a more confident approach, I think, for the rest of the game. So eventually, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was about to say, like the game was, as you said, Michael, the game was concluded after that Locatelli goal. I thought Italy dominated the possession, dictated the tempo of the game. And I was really impressed by the professionalism from the Italy squad.
I mean, yes and no. Like after the second goal, I'm sure everybody kind of relaxed a little bit finally. But there, I think it was shortly after the second goal where Gigio finally was put to work a little
right.
bit. Yep. And he made officially the Swiss only have one shot on target from what I'm looking at. But I thought he made a double save.
Yes, he did.
And maybe it got blocked by a defender, so that's why they're not crediting it with a shot on target. But
I thought it was a double save. Because maybe yeah, so they considered as a cross, but whatever.
Yeah. But yeah, either way, that kind of, once that little flurry passed, then I really settled in. But I mean, if Switzerland score after that, there's still, you know, 15 minutes and change for them to tie it. So it wasn't really until, yeah, like I said, that flurry was done that I thought the 3 points were secured.
Right. And I guess really at that point, the 3 points really get secured in the 86th when Immobile finally finished off his like third chance of the game there. And he had just before this goal. So this goal was similar in the sense that it was outside the box. Correct me if I'm wrong. Outside the box. and same thing. Or actually, he went the other way. He went the other side of the net as Locatelli this time. So he went to the left, and he curls it in past the keeper. But yeah, again, there were two other chances for Immobile from, you know, maybe 10 minutes before. He gets a pass on the left flank. He's running. He's probably just the last man. He has the last man to beat, if that. And he's actually kind of with the keeper at that point, and he just scuffs it wide both times.
I mean, like, like I said, I think it was in the Wales game where the commentator, I think it was from the BBC, said he can miss all he wants as long as it's the winner. So he can miss as many chances as he can as long as Italy wins the game with his goals. I don't care anymore.
I don't buy that, though. Yeah. I don't buy that.
You don't buy that? No?
No, just like I said before, you're not always going to get, you know, three or four grade A chances to finish. Like I said, I think once you're in the quarters as a striker, if you get one or two phenomenal chances to score, you're happy with that. And you have to do well with those chances. So, I mean, sure, you know, if you end up scoring the game winner, everybody loves you and they maybe forget your misses. But I just think that he's missing too many good chances right now for me to say he should be guaranteed a starting spot going forward.
Well, then to that point, Chris, do you think he should play against Wales in the third game?
No. I think Belotti should start. And if he puts in, you know, a top performance, then Mancini has a big decision to make for the knockout stages.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he hasn't shown me again. I know you're saying that if
he's
scored
how
both
crazy,
games too.
Yeah, exactly. I recognize how crazy it all sounds because he scored in both games. But sorry, go ahead.
No. That's all I was going to say is that basically, you know, he's scored. So we're nitpicking here. But again, it's only because we have the ability to do that because they've found ways outside of him. But if there's a game where it's so tight that he's the only one getting a chance and he doesn't bury it, then that's the difference in the game.
Exactly.
I mean, like, I was watching the post game in Italian, and they're you know, Mancini said we're looking to win against Wales. So in my opinion, I think he goes with the same lineup as he did today, and I personally believe that Immobile will start against Wales.
I think if he goes with the same lineup, I think that's a mistake. I think you have the ability. I mean, definitely have a strong lineup, but you can afford now at this point to have, you know, the substitutions are not scrubs by any means. Like if you have Chiesa starting instead of ever, and you have
probably Berardi, but
yeah, and you have Belotti coming on instead of Immobile, like that's still a strong squad who can still play the same system. So I don't think you're sacrificing anything if you do that. What do you think, Julian?
No, I agree. I want to see some rotation. I don't think we need to play the same starting 11. Give the main guys a break, you know what I mean? Especially in the midfield. Again, Insigne and Belotti, I think they could all use a break as well. Mm-hmm. Give Bonucci a break because, I mean,
we saw Chiellini went down. Exactly. Today. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't want, like, more and more injuries to pile up. And as you said, like, there's good players on the bench. It's not like we're going to, I don't know, second division players here. Like, all these guys are starters for their respective teams.
Yeah.
So the problem that I see is that first place is not necessarily secured, right? You're going up against Wales that, you know, they're currently sitting in second place with 4 points. And, you know, if they do pull off a win like Ireland did in, I believe it was 2016 as well. The Ireland, correct me if I'm wrong, it was Ireland that beat Italy in the third game of the group stage. So again, it's not guaranteed that you play your subs and that, you know, you can still pick up points against a team, a nation that is considered inferior to Italy. So, I mean, there's certain players which I do agree with that should be rested. For example, Barella. I think Barella is the engine of that Italy midfield, and I do believe that he should be rested. I do agree with Julian that Bonucci should be rested. I believe Bastoni should get some game time as well, and also, I believe Toloi came in as well as a substitute. So there's certain players that should be played to prove that they're in contention for a spot in the round of 16 game.
To that point, Paulo, though, I'd still say, like I said before, I don't think you substitute as much quality as as you would think if you're completely changing the lineup. I just feel like if you have mostly the same, just you sub in, you know, who your subs would have been actually probably for those players during the game, you could still win those games pretty, at least all they need is a draw realistically.
Yeah. And they're at home still. Keep that in mind. They're still playing the game in Rome. Like they shouldn't lose this game it doesn't matter who they're starting.
Julian, you're right. They shouldn't lose this game. But again, I like to look at precedent as my determining factor for making decisions. And when you kind of lower your guard, you risk in giving your opposition. And I watched the Wales game today. The combination between Bale and Ramsey can definitely hurt. Maybe Canadian probably won't start. Definitely won't start against Wales. But a Bonucci, a Cherby combination, I think Bale and Ramsey can definitely cut through that like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, I think Italy and Mancini showed us that Italy are organized enough that he can rotate players in and out, and that system is still going to be there. They're still going to be organized when they defend. Like mm-hmm. Julian said, there is still a lot of talent in that front line, even if subs are made. So I'm not really that worried if Mancini does decide to make five or six changes to the starting 11 for the Wales game. As good as Ramsey and Bale can be, let's remember they've only played Switzerland and Turkey so far. They haven't played a team that's as organized as Italy, and so I'm not as concerned. Again, you mm-hmm. respect the talent they have, but I think Italy has enough depth to manage it without some of the starters.
Julian, I think it's you that put Turkey at second place, right?
I did, yeah. They've been extremely disappointing. I honestly don't know. On paper, I seriously still think they have the second best squad in the group.
But Paulo, you didn't know the other center back. Is that what you said?
yeah, but you know, Pablito sound cats, right?
Well, that's true as well.
Yeah.
Both can be true. You can. I just want to speak on. You mentioned precedent. Well, let's talk about precedent here in the fact that Italy hasn't won. Hasn't lost in 29 games. So if they go into the Wales game and they come out with a draw or a win, anything other than a loss, obviously, that's 30 games. And I think that's equaling a record.
And Michael, you talk about records.
Are you talking about Ronaldo scoring to?
No. Well, who am I? Sport media set? Anyway.
Are you?
No, I'm not. No, thank God I'm not, by the way. So it's actually 10 straight wins for Italy.
Yeah.
Zero goals conceded. And Chris, you mentioned one shot on target. So it's a total of 8 shots on target conceded.
Wow. So on top of that, it's been since October 2020 that the last time Italy were scored on.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't had that type of form since the 2006 World Cup, in my opinion.
Right. And I mean, things are looking promising then. I mean, that tournament clearly went very well for us. So hopefully that going forward, that this will be another great tournament. I mean, again, it's shaping up to be. It's pretty, it's, you know, a 3-0 victory to start off is pretty nice. But then again, you're maintaining that just dominance over two games. And like Chris said, I mean, it's not, you know, respecting the talent of the other team as well, but it's just, again, then and scraping by with 1-0 victories, which Italy may have done before that. Right. This, what I like specifically about you know, this side is that, again, we're always attacking, we're always pressing, and the defense is almost a not an afterthought, but it is ingrained in them already. You know,
it's secondary, in my opinion.
But secondary, but it's also by nature, it's already in them. So they are able to focus on attacking instead because they're already going to be in those, or they're making themselves in the position where they're not going to have, you know, too many men forward and not enough men back, et cetera, right? They're setting themselves up very well.
So, Mike, I'm glad you said that because I was watching the game and I said to, you know, some of the friends I was watching with saying that I'm not used to seeing Italy, this Italian team, dominating possession.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, but usually dominating possession, but in an offensive way.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And usually, you know, an Italian squad is, or Italian team is, on the defensive, playing on the counterattack. You know, we're talking, you know, 2002 World Cup with Giovanni Trapattoni, and then that type of play and hitting on the counterattack. So it's I guess refreshing to see, and you know, for me personally, I still have to get used to this. I'm still used to, you know, like I said, Giovanni Trapattoni playing on the counterattack and putting, you know, Del Piero on as a substitute, or you know, playing Marco Del Vecchio or something like that. You know what I mean? Like it's something for me to kind of grow into.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, that's two games, two wins. Let's see what happens on Sunday.
Six goals
is incredible.
Again, six goals. I mean, we scored six goals or seven goals in the entire 2006 World Cup. You know? So I mean, I'm kind of in shock right now because it's something that, again, we're not used to, because we're ingrained to seeing that type of defensive mentality, absorbing pressure and hitting on the counterattack. It's strange. It's going to take me a couple more games to get used to.
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay, well, yeah, go ahead.
Just so quickly, it was a matter of time. Sorry, Mike, if you had a question, go ahead.
No, I was literally just going to ask you, like, what you thought, like, because I know specifically we've had segments in the past where you are clearly the breakdown specialist. Like, what do you think of just seeing what we're seeing? I mean, we've been seeing it for a while since Mancini took over, right? But it's just nice to see it, especially considering where we were 5 years ago or 4 years ago or 2 years ago, whatever we were, right? Like, it's a nice change of pace.
I was going to add to that. Those are good points. Just that for me, it's not new right now because, like you said, since Mancini's taken over, this has pretty much been Italy's identity. This is how they've looked. So it's not a surprise for me watching these games, but it's nice now that we're playing on this, you know, global stage. I know it's the Euros, but and they're getting recognized for their play outside of Italy, which is nice to see. And you know, the commentators on TSN are almost surprised after each game because, you know, each preview that they just seems that they're trying to remind everybody about how defensive Italy is. But then they go out and, like Paulo said, six goals in two games, which almost matches our total from the 06 World Cup. So for me, it's just nice to get, for the country and for the players, to get the attention that they deserve. And but with that attention is going to come pressure and expected results, but I think they merit that.
Yeah, great. Does anybody have anything else to add before we wrap up?
I don't know if we do, like, just maybe like a quick touch on do we really want to talk about, like, Denmark, what happened in the past, you know, 3 or 4 days, or do we want to leave it be?
No, I mean, that's we can talk about it in the sense that, you know, we're very happy that Christian Eriksen is okay. It was obviously very scary to see. So, I mean, but Eriksen, during their opening game, suffered a cardiac arrest, I'm pretty sure, on the field, had to be obviously taken to the hospital, but he is fine. Yeah, I'm not sure what more you want to say about that, Paulo.
Well, it's for me, it's the kind of back and forth between UEFA and the Danish you know, well, I guess FA, but we'll call it FA, but it's usually it's Peter Schmeichel, which is Kasper Schmeichel's father, who in my opinion was a better goalkeeper, but that's another story. Saying
you watched
that,
his games, Paulo?
I actually
live.
Did
live. He was there.
But the, I mean, what could UEFA do more? In my opinion, saying that they were forced into it. But remember, this is a tournament.
Paulo, hold on. Before you continue, you have to give some context for people who aren't sure what you're talking about. So,
well, okay.
So just go ahead, to clarify. So, Denmark ended up playing the game again against Finland, and they end up losing later on that day, as opposed to they were given three options to continue playing, to play the next day, so on the Sunday at noon, or to forfeit 3-0. And I guess what you're saying is that they were complaining about, you know, they didn't really have much of kind of just, you know, those are them. You can't really, we have to play the game, et cetera. Like there was no almost, you know, whatever happened to Eriksson was almost an afterthought.
Exactly. So, I mean, and then they were saying that, well, oh, well, if he had a coronavirus, it would have been 48 hours. But I mean, you can't really say that because there was no coronavirus scare. So there was no precedent for this type of situation. I mean, I think we were talking during that time saying that if this was 10 years ago, who knows if Eriksson would have survived, because we have the precedent of Morosini at Livorno who died because of a cardiac arrest on the field. We have Antonio Puerta at Sevilla who died on the field because of a cardiac arrest. So, I mean, there is progress if we look at what happened in the past, but I guess the Danish manager and the Danish FAs do have a point saying that, well, this situation is kind of traumatic for the players, and I do understand that. But if that was the case, then why did the players agree to play that game, finish playing that game that day? They had the opportunity to kind of take 24 hours to kind of regroup themselves and then finish playing that game the next day. So don't say, well, UEFA put us in a position where we had no choice. You had a choice. You had a choice. Yeah. You just didn't take it.
I know you had a good point on this.
Yeah, like my whole thing, I understand why the players did, because if I'm in that situation and you just genuinely witness your teammate die and then get resuscitated on the field, because that is seriously what happened, his heart stopped and then the defibrillator brought him back, I think that whole situation you just want it over with. So I think you just say, sure, we'll play the last 45 minutes of this game just so we can move on from this. Whereas if you wait again another 24 hours, you're dragging this out much longer than it needs to be. Because that's still going to be weighing on everybody's mind. Everybody's still going to be thinking about it. You're just kind of inflicting that on yourself for another 24 hours.
Yeah, I agree with Julian. I think the adrenaline from, you know, the game is probably still, you know, pumping through you. And I agree. I think the longer you think about the fact that you essentially saw your teammate and your friend die on the field, and, you know, thank God he came back. But I think it would have been harder to play the next day once you really, you know, went home or went back to your resort, whatever it was, and thought about what just happened. I think it would have been harder that way.
I have to disagree with both of you because I watched the rest of that game. You guys were probably watching the Belgian game, but I watched the rest of that game, and just it felt there was a lack of energy. They kind of felt drained. They kind of felt that there was something bigger hovering over them. And obviously, you know, they just saw their teammate go to the hospital, right? But if you take 24 hours, you can say, okay, well, he's recovering. We don't have to worry about that situation. We'll come back and we'll play for him. But and so to me, it's kind of hard to say to agree with the decision to play that game. Just because Eriksson told them to go ahead and play that game, that doesn't mean that it was the right decision to do so.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to agree to disagree, because I think the result unfortunate because they lose. You know, they lose 1-0 and a game that was probably winnable for them in a tournament. But I get your point. I get Julian's point. And I agree with Chris's fact that he's in concurrence, because I feel like you just want to, again, you want to get that out of the way, in my opinion. But I get what you're saying, Paulo, for sure, because you literally have the fact that they lost 1-0 as well, you know?
Yeah.
But like you said, it's more important the fact that Eriksson is okay.
Yes, yes.
It remains to be seen what's going to happen after this. Hopefully he's able to kind of continue, but obviously there's going to need to be more, you know, tests done, et cetera. Just
exactly.
So where he is at, yeah.
I just want to say something. In Italy, they have some of the most stringent policy based on like cardiac efficiency or tests because of their history. You know, I mentioned Morosini, and then, you know, unfortunately Astori is another example. That's a sad example. So it's going to be very tough for Eriksson to kind of, you know, come back. And I'm just gonna leave it at that, because I'm not a cardiologist, but again, just precedent is there. But what I want to mention is again, I want to go back to the fact that where we came from. I think I can't remember when Puerto was. I think Chris. I think it was 2006, something like that, right? 2007. So just in, you know, less than 15 years, to come to where we are today, is something extraordinary, in my opinion, because, you know, if we still had the same protocols from 15 years ago, I don't know if we're saying that Eriksson is still alive today.
Yeah, no, I mean, fair. Go ahead.
Paulo, it's even less than that, actually. There was the young kid from Ajax, Abdelak Nouri. He died on the field in 2017.
There you go.
And he was only 20 at that point. So it's scary. Like, it's even Eriksson, like, as you said, they do stringent testing. When he signed with Inter, they tested all the time and there was nothing. But I think, I mean, of course, he's okay. It's amazing that he's okay. I got to give thanks, obviously, to the refs for stopping the game. Literally, I went back, and when they showed it again, he stopped the game, I think, within 5 seconds of Eriksson falling. And medics were able to start CPR on him, I think. On Twitter, they were saying a minute 40, a minute 50 from after he collapsed. And then, of course, Simon Kjær as well, for literally pulling Eriksson's tongue out of his throat so he could have a clean airway. Like, it was literally everything that happened was kind of crazy and kind of a miracle, even though I don't know if I want to use that word. But, like, it was all literally insane how much worse it could have been.
Yeah, no, again, it's very fortunate, what, you know, the fact that, again, that everything, like Paul was saying, they've obviously had some procedures put into place because, you know, they don't want this to happen. And it's worked in the sense that he's okay this time. And hopefully that's, you know, going forward, if there is another instance like this, that unfortunate if it happens, but hopefully it goes the same way, that the player is okay. Okay. I mean, sorry to end on a friggin' bummer, but I think we need to wrap up.
Hey, he's okay. That's the main
thing. That's right. Yeah. So just to kind of recap again, Italy win 3-0. They're the top of their group. They're in first with 6 points, Wales in second with 4, Switzerland third with 1, and the Turkish side has 0 points so far. The only other thing I wanted to add is that it was no wonder that Chiellini's goal was offside, or sorry, it was a handball, because the fourth official in this game was Michael Oliver, the crisp eating Englishman himself.
For those who don't get the reference, Michael Oliver sent off Buffon in that Champions League final against Real Madrid. What was it?
No, it wasn't final. It was
it was the final.
No.
Semifinal?
It was like maybe semifinal. I think it was maybe even the quarterfinals or something. They just come back. So what happened is there was a first leg. Real Madrid won 3-0. Juve came back. It was 3-0. So they were going to go to extra time. But Buffon gets sent off.
Isn't that what happened? Hold on.
Yeah, wasn't it Benatia, and then Buffon gets sent off after that? Isn't that what happened?
No, I think didn't he get sent off for the reaction?
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Benatia just got the pen call against
him. Benatia got the pen, and then Buffon's reaction got him sent off, got him a red.
Yes, yeah.
And Buffon said, if you can't handle the situation, like by giving Real Madrid a penalty with in the 90th plus minute, to make it 3-1, therefore eliminating them. If you can't handle the situation, maybe you should be in the stands eating crisps, French fries with the fans.
So, and then he said something else that I think he had a garbage can for a heart. I think that's
That'll
what it was.
Show him.
Yeah,
maybe it's all those crisps,
all of the above, right?
Maybe. Anywho. I think that's it, guys. I think we had a solid episode here. Very too long. We could have done this in half the time, but
as always,
here we are. That's right.
Listen, people like to hear us rant. All right.
Like to hear you rant.
Yes. And it's us. It's the three of us. Like
I love my fans. Thank you, my fans.
I wouldn't call us fans.
You're welcome, Paulo.
Okay, well, guys, why don't we call it a show then, and we'll be back after the final group game, and we'll be back as well because Italy's going forward, right? They've officially secured at least second position here, so we'll be back with another post game in the elimination round as well. So thanks everybody for listening. Pass this on to your friends. Make sure that they're enjoying Paulo's rants as much. And we'll see everybody following Sunday's game. All right, bye.